we're recording. Right, well, it's nice to see you, Johnny. Usually we deal with pioneers, collaborators and innovators, but this week we've got you. Oh, dear. Well, anyway, welcome back, everybody, to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by a lovely member of the team of the EV Cafe. This week, JC, oh, go away. You're very scary for those of you not watching. He's just descended into the camera. Go, JC. Morning.
Hello. Yeah, morning, mate. Do you know what? People have said I'm scary, and that just baffles me. It really does. I mean, a big cheesy smile, and my arms are usually open wide for a hug. I don't get that, but am I scary? Anyway, move on. It's not about me.
Well, let's ask questions of our guests rather than of you. So every week we get to talk to innovators, pioneers and collaborators, but as you might have heard already, we've got Johnny Berry instead. Johnny is the founder of this mad Woo-hoo! Thing called the EV Cafe. Johnny, welcome. Finally, it had to be the big number 100th podcast. We've got you.
Onto the podcast. No, thank you guys for having me. You've been doing such a great job in 2024 with the podcast. I've loved every second of it, to be honest. I just, just been putting off ever coming on to it, to be honest. But no, thank you for having me again.
What makes you so nervous about it, Johnny?
No, I just, 2024 has been a bit of a mad year. And I think, I listen to a lot of great people. And I don't think my story is particularly interesting, to be honest. So, I'm not sure what the viewership's going to look like, to be honest, at the end of this.
So, Johnny, let me quote from your showreel.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite? Johnny Berry. Johnny Berry challenges me more than anybody. Johnny Berry's my favourite. We love Johnny Berry. He's a great flag waver for us. I mean, it's enough to make the rest of us completely sick. You know, it's like, why do people like you? Johnny, why do people like you?
I really don't know, to be honest. I think perhaps those people that did say nice things about me is just because that I have supported them on their journeys. I do like to support people on their journeys in this space. It's all new to us. And I think that that's an advantage for me as well, because I think you learn the most when you're able to teach it. And that's what I've been looking to do, teach as many people around me, educate as much as, share my knowledge as much as possible. And one of the reasons for starting EV Cafe, right?
I was going to say, but wasn't that the motivation for you starting off? Because I always even remember our very first phone call on this very subject. But tell us all how it began, because I think it's important to get that right at the beginning and then we can go on to the rest of it.
Yeah. I'm very put off by the fact that I look so red on camera. So
don't worry, Johnny. Nobody's going to be looking.
Apologies in advance. If you're not, so don't watch.
Which red berry is Johnny Berry?
It's either sunburn or the illness I've just come out of it. But anyway, so I guess the real reason for starting the EV Cafe was to, yes, continue the conversations around decarbonisation, particularly with fleets, especially as I worked for a vehicle OEM at the time. And my main priority was business development. And how can you develop business when everyone's being told to work from home, shut down your business, furlough your employees? Who's going to want to talk to me about fluffy electric cars? We've got to keep a business afloat here. So I spoke to my counterpart, Matthew, at the time, Matthew Kiziak, and you probably remember him from the early days as well. And I said to him, look, we've got loads of businesses that are shutting down. They're not going to want to talk to us. We're not going to hassle them during this really difficult time. It's not going to go on for very long. Perhaps we could create some sort of like drop-in surgery every week for a couple of hours or something like that. Anyway, many showers and many gym sessions later, this idea grew in my mind to the point where I had to go, Paul, I've got this idea. Can you help me get this off the ground? And here we are. But I will be clear that, the community and the mental health and all these other benefits are a sideline benefit, massive, massive benefit that I could never foresee. At the time, I was just so focused on keeping my job and keeping the conversation around decarbonizing fleets, to be quite honest. honest. What else it's done for the industry has been just amazing to see, really, and for this to grow, obviously.
But you're so much more than just vehicles, Johnny. I mean, we've discovered, because we're a bit closer to you than a lot of people who might be tuning in, we've discovered a man of high principle who doesn't say much. He doesn't fill the space with loads of garbage. You don't say much in meetings, but when you do, it's gold. Your knowledge of sustainability in its widest sense exceeds us by some distance. You seem to be an incredibly knowledgeable person, and with all due respect, you know, I'm almost twice your age, and you've amassed so much knowledge and skill in that time, but you're quite you're almost in the background. Has that always been your way? Were you like that as a young person?
I think I've learned over time that listening is a very, very powerful tool. So which sometimes comes across as being quite quiet, especially in forums like this, webinars, podcasts, news, stuff like that. I like to surround myself with more knowledgeable people, especially within my team. And give them
well, that was
the
a
sort
fail.
Of empowerment. Yeah, apart from the cafe, that was a bit of an exception. But no, I've always been the guy that's a bit more outspoken, to be honest, and that's the bit that I've tried to hone in on over the past few years, is to try and not be that guy anymore, and be more of a listener and add value where needed, and not needing the last word, not try to be the Johnny Berry show or anything like that. I think that's just a thing that's happened over the last few years, if I'm honest.
Did somebody inspire that?
I don't know if it's
that?
Rooted into anything else, though.
did anybody inspire that? Were you given feedback that it was the Johnny Berry show and listening is as important as speaking? Or what caused that to happen, do you think?
I don't think it's just that, though. I do think highly of you all. So I'll put you guys' opinions first before I share mine. So I don't think it's all of that. I don't think I've received necessarily... I received feedback a long, long time ago when it was in the sales environment, actually. I was in a working jointly with a vehicle OEM and one of the biggest franchisees, and they were just launching their EV program, and I came in as an innovation specialist, basically a guy that knew about EVs to try to sell EVs and help the sales team sell EVs. And I was really good at talking to the customer and telling them all about it. But one thing that the sales guys, and including myself at the time, would say is that you've got two of these and one of these, two ears, one of these, use it in that, you know. So that's always played in the back. I guess it's just always played in the back of my mind, to be honest, is that in every case, I talk quite a lot, and I go into the weeds quite a lot, and I get that feedback. But I've only recently learned the sort of levels of detail that I need to go into, you know, if I'm C-suite, it's very high level. If I'm going into like the project manager needs to know the stuff, I'll go into the level of detail I need to. But I guess my job is every week, multiple presentations. And so I know that I'm talking a lot now. So it's probably been more about my own self-reflection more than anything else.
It's such an important thing. And we were reflecting on this earlier, that communication and enabling the message to land effectively with the widest possible audience is really critical. And that was the great thing about what we did in COVID, when we kicked off and just really, we grabbed everybody, and it was, and what we've discovered is this phrase funner, that getting the messages across in the appropriate way and the appropriate time is critical to learn. And we are one element of that. And I think, you know, you're learning as you speak right now, what the corporate world looks like, you know, the different levels. And let's face it, your career with your current employer, Navuna, has really gone from strength to strength, hasn't it? Mm. You know, you are well favoured within that business, but also outside, very, very highly respected. And this is a business that operates in the commercial vehicle world, close to my heart, but very much making yourselves very central to this whole conversation. So it sounds like learning is at your core. What were you like at school?
So that's a good question. So the earlier years, I was always excelling at school, and it was only when I moved away from, because I was in school in East Grinstead. And then my mum and dad split up, and then I moved in with my stepdad and his family in Helsham, a place called Helsham. And it was only then I started to rebel a little bit, probably mixing around with the wrong crowd. But very early on, I was, again, going to a new school, being told that I was the smartest individual there. I know, in disbelief there, John. And, you know, and luckily I had such a good start. But when I moved, mixing with the wrong crowd, rebelling a little bit, it was no longer a primary focus to do well at school. But I just naturally retained the information and was able to do all right, subsequently going to university. So that was it, really. If I can't explain something, like a four-year-old, to a four-year-old, sorry, not like a four-year-old, to a four-year-old,
you often
they
do that.
Can understand it. And I've got a four-year-old now, so and I can definitely not do that. That's a rubbish saying. Then I know that I need to learn more.
Well, it's not a rubbish saying, because of course the man that said it first was a chap that you might know, Albert Einstein, said if you can't explain your area of expertise in the worlds of a 6-year old, he suggested. So he set the bar slightly higher, lower, not sure. So it's not such a stupid saying. But it's interesting, isn't it, that I'm really pleased that you've managed to come through the trough. But talk to us about that trough, because, you know, family life is so shaping, isn't it, as to the people that we become. My parents divorced when I was 10. You know, I didn't see my mum for a long time, so I know that, you know, my life started to crumble, and that reflected in other areas of life. Is that how you see what happened with you?
Do you know what? This has been playing in the back of my mind for some time. And the reason it has is probably because I've been listening to a lot of Stephen Bartlett. And he always asks that first question, doesn't he? Like, your formative years. Tell me about your formative years to who you are now. What makes you who you are now? I butchered that. Anyway.
So we've murdered Albert Einstein and Stephen Bartlett. Let's see who else we can murder.
I'm not doing too well. Maybe I need some more Lemsip. So it always makes me think when he asks that question to the audience. I sometimes have to rewind the show because I've just been thinking about it myself, thinking about my answer myself. And it's very easy to associate who I am to my past. It's very easy to do that. As to why I am who I am today. However, that's all bullshit, to be honest, because I've got a twin brother who lived the exact same life. Every single thing happened to me happened to him, right? And we could not be any more polar opposites than we are today in every facet, interests, principles, values in our life. And so that's what frustrates me. Because there is no resemblance from me and my brother, yet we lived the exact same life. So how is that even possible? So that's the bit that really, really frustrates me. But yeah, I mean, I look back and we've all got our trials and tribulations. We've all got our rite of passage. But I think to myself that anybody that's going to be arguably homeless after university is going to have the drive to work hard. I can't see why you wouldn't. You don't want to be on the streets. So, and that was a very real situation for me. And so, but I don't know if that genuinely was the reason for my work ethic, because I feel like actually maybe I would have had the same work ethics anyway. I've always wanted to succeed. I've always wanted to prove myself to who I don't know. prove to who, you know. So, yeah, it's a really interesting question, one that just keeps going round and round in my mind. But it always comes back to that I've got a twin brother and he's nothing like me.
So one of the things that is different, I guess, is that you might have had different influences throughout your life, you and your brother. Who was the biggest influence on you?
It's a really good question. I think admiration for certain individuals probably has the biggest influence on me and what I do. And they've changed throughout the course of time, I think. It's going to sound cliche, but, you know, when I first started out in the EV industry, the biggest influence was Elon Musk, what he was trying to do with Tesla somewhat 10, 12 years ago now. And that's obviously changed throughout the past. So, yeah, that's probably it, to be honest. There's not been one single where I can pinpoint one particular individual in my life that's been an influence. Maybe there's an element of my dad, you know, always wanting to work hard. He's having his own business. He runs a couple of card shops. He had DVD shops in the past. And so, you know, seeing how much he worked and the sacrifice he made, it's probably a bit of an influence, or I at least took influence from him. But no, nothing in particular, John. It'll probably come back to me a bit later on today and go, oh, bloody hell, this person had more of an influence than I, you know.
So what was it about Elon then? Because Elon's been on a journey too and has gone from, you know, being that inspirational innovator through to now a big political figure, not only in America, but he's having an influence on our own domestic politics. What was it about Elon Musk that you saw that made you want to track his life and his career?
I think I paid a particular interest in electric vehicles in that time because I watched a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car. And I remember finishing the movie, and if anyone hasn't seen it, and it's old now, but I do urge you go watch it. And The Revenge of the Electric Car was a subsequent movie. But and I remember coming away from that feeling almost at a time where I was a big fan of cars. You know, it's Fast and Furious at the movies. You know, all I cared about is fast cars. And I watched this movie and I came away really frustrated at the industry, like the oil industry and OEMs and stuff like that. It was just so obvious. And so I naturally looked for somebody that was, you know, Elon Musk, essentially, that was fighting back. And so I really admired that. I'd really admired that from Elon Musk, but not just that, just the success of someone like Elon Musk at the time. I saw someone that, you know, just sold PayPal and had done some really cool stuff when he was a kid with games and selling games and stuff like that. And his drive, I admired that from him. But later years, I probably don't so much. I do value my family time. I do value some personal life. And that actually, to be honest, jumping all over the place here, it's podcasts and listening to these CEOs that they're in their later lives that's made me realize what's important in life. And so I'm very grateful for podcasts to give me that realization now than the realization when it's a bit too late. Because I do have a one-year-old and I do have a four-year-old at home. That's probably why I'm red in the face.
Johnny, listen, you know, what's clear is, I mean, that influence on you at that time, sort of 12 or so years ago, I mean, that takes us back to 2014. 2016, I noticed, was a big year for you because you got the Global CEO Award for Nissan, I think it was, selling the Nissan Leaf. I mean, that's huge. You met the CEO of a global company, the global CEO, not the local one, not the one from down the road in, you know, Maple Cross or wherever it is, but the one in Japan, and I guess you went out there and did. Two things. One, how did that shape your future? But two, what was driving you to have that sales ethic in a sustainable, very weird, you know, mode of transport back then, you know, not now, but back then it was weird, right? Weirdos, tree huggers, and what drove you, one, to go down that particular road, and two, how was it, and how did that shape you moving forward?
So, just quickly then, the reason I won the award was because when I joined Nissan and worked particularly with this franchise group, and I worked out of Tunbridge Wells went from the first year of selling the Nissan Leaf 20 or so vehicles in that first year. And then when I joined, I did 20 in the first week. I continually did that, to be honest. And I just absolutely, I found it so easy, so easy. And I think, even to the point where Japan, people in Japan were messaging us directly saying, what are you doing? Right. Can you do some seminars? Can you do some presentations and tell us what you're doing? But I guess I am probably a little bit of a salesman at heart. Maybe I'm good at getting people on side. I got you guys on side for the EV cafes some 4 years ago now.
Mad idea. Mad.
Must have been a good sales guy to get you guys on board at the time. And you know, I guess I'm young and I'm really, really inspired by it. I found real inspiration in this, and I just, at the time, it was just clear as day. It was clear as day as it was '90s when we're talking about internet. You know, like it was just obvious to me. And when people came into the showroom and they were looking at a cash car and they were going to pay £300 a month, and I'm just saying, guys, look, this is madness. You know, you've got a really good car, family car. You're not doing the, you know, going through that whole spiel. You know, all the different strategies. You know, and so I just really, really enjoyed. I'm obviously really inspired. I'm into cars. Got a bit of sales in me, and you know, I've just recently gone down the EV rabbit hole and just gone, this is crazy. People should need to know this. People need to get up and go. And the other thing is obviously I really wanted to provide. You know, I recently just got into a long-term relationship and moved back down to the south where I've been living in London. And so I thought, well, I've got no money at all and I need to provide, I need to do well as well. So you put all this together and genuinely enjoying it, genuinely, really, really enjoying it. I can't remember a better time when I was talking to Joe Bloggs in the dealer about his personal car and changing it for a Leaf. And, you know, that's why I excelled in a very affluent area. That certainly helped as well. So it all came together. It all came together. Your other question, Paul, was how has that set me up? Is that, I guess, that has just given me this kind of like something that I'm good at, validation that I'm good at, and I kind of know my stuff. And so I felt like I hit a ceiling, and I knew that fleet has a bigger impact in terms of the sort of mileage that an individual car does and a business car does. And how much that represents in this market share, the market space, and then also, you know, commercial vehicles. And it's not just about personal cars, it's also about commercial vehicles. So I was given an opportunity, or I saw an opportunity online, which was a fleet development manager for another OEM, happened to be part of the alliance at the time. I don't believe they're so much aligned anymore, but so that's what entered me in the fleet world. And then I realized just how big this world is, not just the vehicles, but the whole ecosystem. Mm. And so, you know, my passion for the whole ecosystem started then. And so I genuinely have so much passion when I talk, and I'm really enthusiastic when I talk about the whole ecosystem to whoever it might be, to internal stakeholders, to C-suites, to project management. I'm in my happy place when I'm doing that. And I don't know why.
Now then, Johnny, it's easy to talk about a happy place, my friend, but and yeah. you've had huge success, and that shouldn't be understated. Despite being so humble, you are an incredibly clever and driven human being. But things don't always work out. Tough days happen. Can you give us an example of how you pull yourself out of difficult situations? So what happened? Why was it so difficult? And how did you get yourself out of it?
I go back to times where they've been really, really difficult. You know, and I don't think it gets much difficult, any difficult than losing a loved one, right? Mm. And I think that, for me, has created this, and I don't like this about myself, it's created this kind of like barrier, like I won't show my emotions, and made me tougher. Well, doesn't kill you, makes you stronger, you know, apparently. So, you know, I, because of those moments in my time and very early on, the difficult situations that I find myself in today are never going to amount to those difficult times in the past. So I am able to get myself through it, you know, or was able to get through that. I can definitely get through maybe a challenge at work or a challenge in my personal life or something like that. So, yeah, I kind of just, I guess I'm strong in that case. And that's obviously has its benefits. And I'm kind of always looking for, and that kind of inspires me a little bit to look for the resolution, to fix things, get things going, and inspire people and bring them back up, you know, lift everybody up. But the kind of trade-off is that I don't really show any emotions, I'm not very vulnerable around Michelle, my wife, or, you know, not very that kind of individual. And that's not very good. You know,
but I see that, Johnny, and we you know we've talked obviously we won't talk about certain of these things here, but life does throw big rocks at us at times, and they do kind of, you know, we put up those shields to protect ourselves from the big rocks, and this is, you know. And then somebody throws a little pebble at us that we could deal with, you know, but we still put this big shield up because that's what we're used to doing. Put that shield up because it saved us once, it'll save us again. But what I've noticed and what I what draws me to you, what makes me love you, is that you genuinely care about other people. And that's really clear. And when other people are going through difficult stuff, you inherently have empathy and that kind of thing. Do you think that this, you know, the tough things that you've spoken about, or maybe it's something else, but that really taught you the value of good mental health? And, you know, we saw the spin-off in COVID, but I think you had that there all of the time. It feels to me that you've been very aware of other people's challenges and other people's difficulties, and you really value the job that we are all doing in terms of mental health. Why is that so important to you? How's that come about?
Oh, it's a tough question, that is. It's a real tough question. I think just going back to, we've all got a past. Just going back to the way I was feeling during two particular moments in my life, it's given me that kind of realization that we've all got things going on, and we're all going to go through that. And so just being mindful of that at all times. And I would also say that things could have been different if we were a bit more aware of other people. So maybe that's where it's come from. But, you know, I will go back to what I said earlier around the EV Cafe. I don't know if it was necessarily, I can't think back now 4 or 5 years ago, if that was necessarily on my mind at the time. At the time, it probably was about a selfish, for starting the EV Cafe. It was more selfish, you know, how do we keep the conversations going? Ultimately, how do I keep selling EVs to Flix? but I love the fact that it has. I love the fact that it has.
It's an amazing byproduct that we all embraced, didn't we? I think I'd recently been trained by LeasePlan, actually, who did actually win, I think, win jointly with Enterprise, actually, one year, the Mental Health Award at Fleet News or whatever it was.
I
think it was the inaugural James Davis Award, when, because, of course, losing, you guys may not know him, but James Davis, you know, losing him to suicide, and then putting him, it was good. So the subsequent award, you know, that to reflect good behavior by major companies in this area was super powerful, and it's exciting to be able to see that change, and we play a little part in that. So Johnny, thank you for supporting it, and you know, as the founder, kind of letting that play out, you know, as it did, and supporting it so positively. I know you have a lot of conversations off the back of this, and personal encouragements, as we heard in many videos, that people know that you will touch base with people very much off the beaten track, you know, not in normal every day, and you'll do that.
There's a bit of Superman about Johnny.
he has taken his glasses on and off a few times.
Lois Lane falls off a building, I think, and Superman swoops down, catches her in his arms, and he says to her, "Don't worry, ma'am, I've got you." And Lois says to him, "Yeah, you've got me, but who's got you?" And Johnny, I know who's got you, because you are massively supported by Mrs. Berry and the Little Berries. Family is key for you, isn't it? It's hard, because constantly in life we're being pulled in different directions, and I've seen this, we've all seen it with you, how trying to fit in so much into your life causes you to be pulled here, there and everywhere. How do you make time for family? Because you do, you're very strong about this. How do you make time for your family?
So it is really important for me, John, you are right, because I just can't see how I would wake up in the morning and do what I do when I know that they're hellish days some days, without that in my back of my mind, you know, being able to provide. But the, how I balance family time is that it's a really difficult one. So if I have any leave or any time off, I'll make it damn certain that we are spending time together as a family with no distractions. And so one of the things that I've done last year, and I'm going to be completely honest with everybody on the call here, I cannot afford to do this, but I've made it, I've had to do it. And I am working on a decarbonized solution, but I did buy a motorhome last year. It isn't the best, right? It is a diesel, right? But I am trying to figure out how to make it electric. And there are ways. It's got a certain payload, and that, you know, it's going to cost a lot more than I can afford. But, and I will get to it, I will talk about it. But the reason I bought that, or at least I tell myself the reason I bought that, is that, you know, when I do have those weekends or any time off, it's very easy to jump in that with the family and go somewhere, even if it's just the New Forest. And therefore, I know that I'm not distracted. I know that John's not going to call me and say, "Can you jump on this for me?" I know you don't, John, anyway. But, work, or I've got to do this email, or I've got to go to Tesco's, or I've got to go to the gym, or my mate's called me up for a pint or something like that. Because it's so easy, isn't it, right? And so jumping in that motorhome, and even just the New Forest, parking in a pub for a couple of nights at the weekend with the family. I am stuck with my family, whether I actually really like it or not. This is not a question. But I know I'm making up for lost time with them, right? And so that's always been my thing, that, you know, any annual leave, any time off, any bank holidays, is that I will try to be with them. But at the same time, I know what I'm doing is really not any well, of course, it's benefit to me, but it's providing for them. So nothing is more important than giving them the life that perhaps I didn't get, you know. Mm-hmm. So that will always override things. I'll give up seeing them for a whole year if it meant that they were going to have a better life, you know. It's at the same time, they still need me to be there. And I guess that I probably would have been more inclined. I probably wouldn't have thought about that so much if it wasn't, again, for the podcast, listening to those C-suites in their later lives and going, my biggest regret was this. And I'm not going to make that same mistake. Yeah. You know, I'm very lucky to listen to that and go, I'm not going to make that same mistake. And that was one of the reasons for buying the motorhome. My credit cards and loans and stuff like that are killing me every month.
But Johnny, this is so important, isn't it? That, you know, we do for the benefit of human beings, other human beings. And the most important human beings in our lives are our wives, our families, our kids, our parents, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, when we think about, and this, I heard this fact recently, that a doctor was working in a city. They were giving out inhalers all of the time. I think I might have mentioned this on a recent podcast. And then they move out to the country, a sort of New Forest idea, and they're not giving out inhalers anywhere to the kids that live there because those kids are not being infected by the thing. Mm. So we've got a purpose, and I'm not saying you're taking a diesel motorhome to small children in the New Forest, but because we shouldn't feel guilty about those things. We are the people that are really driving that conversation forward, in particular you, Johnny, with, you know, in the world that you live in Navoona, and the company's the country's largest fleets, right, that are going through massive challenge around decarbonisation, which you are helping for actively. We can't feel guilty. I was aware of somebody that had clearly been to some far-flung land was swimming with manta rays. You know, well, they've not walked there, but they it's like they deserve that opportunity to understand and appreciate the world that we're working hard to try and save. You know, I know that sounds very grand, doesn't it? The world that we're working hard to save, but you know, that's the reality, and we shouldn't feel guilty is basically what I'm thinking. You know, we shouldn't feel guilty. You are passionate. Your family is your driver, and and leaving them alone for a year won't help, by the way. They need you. They need you, Johnny Berry. What makes you most proud, Johnny Berry, of life? You know, the life that you've lived so far, what are you most proud of?
If you don't say your daughter, I'm going to be very disappointed. Met her at Carfest.
Oh,
she's a work of art, that one.
No. I just say I think I'm most proud of the life that I've built for my family so far.
Yeah. So 2025 then, mate. We're just at the start. What's it look like for you? What are your focuses? What are the things that you are absolutely committed to?
I'd say converted my diesel motor. Definitely up there. And, you know, New Forest might be the only place we could go because that's only up the road for us. But in 2025 is to create more memories with my family. So we're actively looking at what leave can I take this year and what can we do with that. Work-wise, I want to educate more. I'm going to commit now, aren't I, by saying this, but I want to be a bit more active on LinkedIn. I won't say what I want to do just yet, just in case I've got some skin in the game then. But I do want to, I felt towards the back end of the year, there was a lot of moments where I was presenting to big corporates about a whole host of stuff when it comes to transitioning. So I'm thinking about, is there a way that I can feed that information into the industry via a platform like LinkedIn, maybe in an idea or a thought or advice or a tip or something like that, even on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So I am looking to do that, perhaps start next week. And so, yeah, and really my ultimate goal is to, in a work profession, is to continue the advancement of sustainable transport, really, mainly road transport. And the way I'm going to do that is by helping these big corporates get over all of those challenges and get them to understand how to do it, how to do it right as well. You know, not just how to do it, but how to do it in the right way. And so, you know, we could talk about that for days and days and days. Sticking a load of vans in and sticking some sockets out the wall and plugging them in isn't enough.
No.
Unfortunately, there's a hell of a lot more. Hell of a lot more. If you've got a few more hours, we could talk about that.
But Johnny, that is what you are brilliant at in terms of challenging thinking, providing opportunities. You don't just challenge the thinking and say, oh, look, you go and try harder. You present solutions. You present opportunities to make a difference. And that's what I love. Now, we have a very important tradition, much as other podcasts have a tradition towards the end of a podcast. We also have a tradition, and it has been helped along by a chap called Benoit Laflamme that you used to work with, I believe. He used to be a Nivula employee a couple of years ago. Anyway, he was kind enough to help us with our end of podcast tradition, and that is the magic wand. Here it is. This is a 3D printed magic wand. So everybody on Apple or Spotify, you'll need to jump to YouTube just to have a quick look at the magic wand. So a brilliant little thing. So I'm handing
nobody
this to
you. Nobody wants to look at Paul Kirby's magic wand, let me tell you. Nobody. It's a...
Stop it, John. Right, so here you go, Johnny. It's coming to you. There you go. It's through the... there we go. It's in there. what would you do with said magic wand with one wish? What would you do?
Oh, there's... If I'm talking about the industry that we're in, I'd probably just say remove all misinformation. That's it. But wider than that... You know, oh God, what would I do? I would stop climate change.
Do you know what? Nobody's actually said that yet. The misinformation, but nobody's actually said keep it below 1.5 degrees. I mean that's a very, very laudable and intelligent. You are the most intelligent in the room again.
It's not difficult, to be fair.
Well, in this room, no.
I'd be completely out of a job. So,
oh, yeah.
Head of decarbonisation and having a vehicle suit. Well, you've made a wish to remove all the carbon out of the atmosphere. And then we've got no more climate change, so we don't really need you anymore. You've got some marigolds you can change.
So what else would you do then? So if that was to happen and you were to get rid of the problem,
good question.
What else would you do?
Wow, that is a question. I think I'd have to fall in love with another industry again. And how do I do that? What else do I have passion in? Probably music, something to do with music. So I really like my music.
What are you listening to at the moment? What's getting your feet tapping at the moment?
Well, it was Wham because it was a Christmas period, but I slowly fall into the trap of rubbish music, which is techno and progressive.
You love that stuff, don't you? Yeah, when we get into your car and you take us somewhere, the first thing you do is whack the sounds on.
Yeah, don't talk to me. We're listening to music. I like being knowledgeable. I like educating. I like being in the industry that I've got passion with. I like being a disruptor, so I'd have to bring all that together and go, what does that look like?
Are you going to be a travel guide then, Johnny?
Possibly. Possibly. We still need EVs. I might not be out of a job because we still need it for air quality. So I haven't removed that issue. I've already done the climate change. So that'll keep me in the job.
See? Up there for thinking, down there for dancing. See,
clever again, clever again. Oh, dear.
Just don't forget it's a twin imperative, right?
A twin imperative?
You don't believe in climate change, that's fine.
Tell you, he's fancy, you know, this boy's fancy.
He is. Well, Johnny, listen, we've waved our wand. We've come to the end of our time. I do think there is lots and lots of other conversation that we can have. Mm. I'm looking forward to the commercial vehicle show. We'll definitely have you as one of our speakers, because there's going to be some great fleets that we can talk to, public sector that we can talk to, and get this conversation out to as many people as possible, because I know that that's your passion and your heart. You want to educate, you want to inform, we want to deal with that misinformation, bust those myths, and give quality information into the market. And that's been clear. Johnny, thank you for sharing, you know, and touching on some of the stuff that has shaped you. I know that some of that is not easy for you to even think about. It's great to know that right at your core, you've got family and that empathy and that passion, drive to provide, you know, for those around you. And we know that because, you know, you have shown passionate care for us as a team as well on different occasions. And so we know that this goes beyond just the surface. And we really appreciate you. Thank you for your brilliant idea. Thank you for being inspirational on the journey, and thank you for being as passionate as you are today in your role today, helping make decarbonisation possible for those fleets that you saw all those years ago. Fantastic. Any final thoughts, JC?
Yeah, two. I think what's really interesting for me is when Johnny speaks, very often if you listen back to this, his answers were quite short. He's a man who knows his mind. He's a man of conviction, man of passion. But passion doesn't mean fill the space with meaningless words. It's all considered. It's all thought through. And there's a heck of a lot goes on in his head, but not much falls out of his mouth. When it does, listen, because he's good.
Thank you, JC.
Well, unlike us two...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not always the case, though, JC. I am off and drivelling on presentations and stuff like that. But no, thank you.
Behave.
Well, that's it, folks. That has been the 100th episode of the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that Johnny Berry saw and invested in 100% all those years ago. And here we are today, still peddling the dream, because it's becoming a reality, and it's a necessity without any question that we continue to be as focused, as purposeful as Johnny Berry was, that took him to a global CEO award back in the day and drove him to make the life choices, job choices that he's made up until now. And here we all are. Thanks, JB. You are a star. And if you want to hear more of those podcasts that have been a blessing to Johnny over the years, one of those 100 that we've done before, head over to the EV Cafe or Spotify or Apple. Of course, you can find us there. Follow us on LinkedIn and YouTube, because then you can see the magic wand. There we go. Until next time, have a great day, everybody.
You take care.